everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast. Here with your hosts, Jacob Smedley,
Justin Rehammer,
Peter Amarante,
and Nathan Romanoff.
Topics today, Major League Baseball playoffs are back. There's a few teams that are looking to repeat success of last year and newcomers to the field. We'll discuss it further in just a moment. And the NFL season is underway. Some teams are making waves across the league. We'll break it all down for you. And in the NBA, a few guys trading teams. We'll discuss it right here on the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast. Now here's, I guess I'll just take it, guys. Sam is not with us tonight. Got a test coming up. All of us in the heart of our semesters, so we respect Sam. Sad that he cannot join us for his beloved segment, as all of us know. But I'll start us off with the MLB playoffs. Guys, last time we talked, it was about 2-3 weeks ago, end of the season. Sam was breaking down the wild card predictions. The field has been set and games have been started. In the National League, the Atlanta Braves got the number one seed. The Los Angeles Dodgers got the number two seed. And then the rest of the teams played in the wild card. The Milwaukee Brewers hosted the Arizona Diamondbacks, and the Philadelphia Phillies hosted the Miami Marlins in the 4-5 matchup in the National League. In the American League, the Baltimore Orioles got the number one seed. The Houston Astros, on one of the final days of the regular season, got the win, got a loss from the Texas Rangers to steal the number two seed, and once again, for another year, get a bye into the playoffs. The 3-seed Minnesota Twins hosted the 6-seed Toronto Blue Jays, and the Tampa Bay Rays hosted the Texas Rangers, and the wild card series is over, guys. The Rangers beat the Rays. The Twins beat the Blue Jays. The Diamondbacks, in an upset, beat the Brewers, and the Phillies took down the Marlins, all of which being in a sweep to set up Phillies Braves for a second consecutive season, Dodgers D-backs. And in the American League, the Orioles and the Rangers and the Twins and the Astros. Guys, I'll start there. Which wild card team maybe surprised you the most out of all of the sweeps that took place?
Surprised me the most, I would have to go with the Diamondbacks, Jake. I didn't see this coming, to be quite honest. They were, correct me if I'm wrong, the last team to sneak into the wild card in the NL. And, you know, going to Milwaukee had a very solid season in their own right and looked like they could potentially make a bit of a run this year in the playoffs. But just the Diamondbacks went into Milwaukee and kind of owned the place. I mean, their offense, you know, even when they were down in the game, they got it going. The bats got swinging and, you know, they really just stepped up when the light shined brightest. And I didn't expect it personally.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to agree. I really thought that Arizona surprised me. I would say that I wasn't completely set on them losing this series. I thought they could have, like, maybe had a couple wins, couple losses, but I did not think it was going to be a sweep personally. Like Nate said, I mean, it was just the bats got hot when they needed to. And like you said again, Nate, the Milwaukee atmosphere is different in the postseason than most stadiums. So congratulations to the Arizona Diamondbacks. And I know we'll probably lead into this, but they have let that momentum carry and carry and carry. So, I mean, hey, kudos to the Diamondbacks for playing how they're playing.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to agree with you guys. I think the Minnesota Twins for me. Now, of course, you look at the seed and you look at, okay, the number three seed, they won their division. Probably they won the worst division in baseball. I think that's fair to say, the AL Central. And just with all of the times I've seen the Twins in the postseason in recent years, I just didn't trust them. Their offense worries me, and they have the pitching with Pablo Lopez and Sonny Gray. But going into that series, could their offense outslug the Blue Jays? And they barely did. They won low-scoring games, but they proved to me that they can hang with the top of the American League. I think all season long it was, oh, you know, whoever gets the sixth seed will knock out the Twins in the wild card. And And that's how I thought going into it. Oh, you know, the Blue Jays will win in advance, but really handled business at home and against the Astros. Game going on right now while we're recording this. I think that series could go five. The problem, though, is can the Twins hit as much as the Astros? I think that's the biggest thing. But surprised that that series didn't go three and that the Twins came out of it with the win. Now moving to the divisional series, we went through kind of each matchup. Who do you guys think from the respective leagues will be in the championship series? And then we'll get to the World Series.
Respectively speaking, if we start in the NL, yes, there's a little bit of bias here. I'm going to admit that right off the bat. But with the way the Philadelphia Phillies have been playing, especially to start this postseason in the wild card and in game one against the Braves yesterday, I mean, the pitching has been fantastic. And Nola, Wheeler, great quality starts. And, you know, even Ranger Suarez the other day didn't go very long, but pitched well when he was in for those, you know, three or so innings. And the bullpen stepped up huge for the team. And the bullpen, for me, has always been a bit of a question mark, you know, in the past. It's always, you know, scared me a little bit. And they really just, they look so solid this year. You know, you have an all-star closer in Craig Kimbrell. You have guys like Jose Alvarado, who's pitching great, you know, right now. Strom, who came in, got a big play the other day. You know, so I love what I'm seeing from the Phils. And I think that, you know, at this moment in time, they can make that push to the championship series. And then in the other series, I mean, we talked about the Dodgers, Diamondbacks. They're playing the Dodgers. Smoked them in game one. Wasn't even close. Now, Kershaw had a terrible, terrible out. Like, I don't even know when he got pulled. Did he get pulled after the first inning?
First inning. They pulled him in the
terrible.
First inning.
So they have some work to do, but I think that game, that series, I think both series, just to be clear, are going to be close 4 or 5 game series. And, you know, just momentum wise, I'm going to go with the Diamondbacks to roll on. I like what they're doing right now. So in the NL, I'll take Phillies Diamondbacks to make the championship series.
Wow. I mean, Nate could not have set up a better transition for me here, because I'm going to roll right off the upsets. I mean, both the Phillies and the Diamondbacks have a lower seed, but I want to first talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. Yeah, Nate covered that quite well. It was quite blatantly obvious that Clayton Kershaw had a very off game for his caliber of play. You know, the Dodgers couldn't get the bats going very well either. I mean, a lot of their players were struggling to make contact with the ball. However, kudos to the Arizona pitching staff, because, you know, they did a fantastic job holding the Dodgers' bats. And so, I mean, I'm a little skeptical on this one more than the other series. So I'm going to say Arizona will win, but I think they'll win by one game. If they win, it'll be by one game. I think the Dodgers will answer, and then the Arizona, I think it'll go back and forth. I don't think anybody's going to have like a 2-0 or like a multi-win lead. So I think it's going to go back and forth. However, with the Phillies, I mean, talk about momentum with a team where all year round, you know, it's highs and lows and highs and lows and frustration as fans. You know, you're just pulling your hair out every game because either the bullpen's not working right or the bats aren't getting hot, you know. And then finally, Red October comes around and this Philly squad just clicks into a new dimension. And it's just the bats are hot. The pitching staff, incredible. Closers, relievers, all these guys on the pitching staff themselves, phenomenal job. The defense, some of the defensive plays that we've seen over the last few games, fantastic. I mean, talk about the Braves game where Trey Turner had that little dive leap for that grab to create that play. I mean, phenomenal defensive plays. And then you talk about the bats, you know. I was watching the game. I was talking to one of my friends. I said, if we want to secure this win, Bryson Stott needs to hit a grand slam. And what does the kid do? Kid slams a grand slam. I mean, you can't find another team with a fan base that is as passionate as the Philadelphia Phillies. They will boo their own players if they're doing bad, and they will cheer until death do them part. But, like, I mean, with the Phillies' momentum, I think that if the Phillies win again in Atlanta, or even if they don't, it's going to be a very scary atmosphere for these Atlanta players to come play in Philadelphia, because Philadelphia will not hold back, especially in a divisional rival. So I'm taking Arizona, Philadelphia.
You guys are both going with the upset picks. And while I would love to agree, and you know, I'm trying to turn the bias hat off here. I know Nate's wearing the Phillies hat. Peter's got the cap on. I think the Phillies Braves, if it doesn't go four or five games, I'd be shocked. To be quite frank, I don't think either team's going to sweep. I think for the Phillies' sake, I think they have to win in four. I just can't see them going 3-4 at home in that ruckus environment there at Citizens Bank Park. Then having the Braves force a game five, then you got to go back down to Atlanta in that case. Going over to the Diamondbacks, Dodgers, I'm not counting out the Dodgers yet. I know their postseason fumbles. I know what they've done recently. Their one championship over the last 4 or 5 years of being the best team or one of the best teams in baseball. I'm not counting them out. But I think I'm going to say Dodgers in five. I think they're going to respond, get a win at home. I will see what the Arizona crowd is going to be in games three and four. I'm going to say Dodgers in five. So I think the Dodgers are on that end. And I'm going to say the Phillies in four. I think if the Braves win the next two, that changes everything. I think it moves to at least a five-game series and even could change the winner. But as it stands right now, with Philly taking the first game, eerily similar to last season, I'm going to say Phillies and Dodgers on the National League side, a rematch of 2008. Guys, to the American League, Twins Astros, and you've got Orioles Rangers, Orioles who were at this time of recording a down 0-2 in the series, the Rangers taking both games in Baltimore.
Yeah, and that to me comes as quite a big shock. I mean, Baltimore had such a great year this year. I mean, fantastic season, but you know, they come out, they have the number one seed, and they have the, you know, the bye, no wild card play, and you have the Rangers who played a fantastic wild card series, and now, you know, you look at it, Orioles are in a hole, and it doesn't look good. It's bleak, to be honest. It's really tough. I don't know what the statistics are in MLB in terms of a team coming back from down, you know, 0-2 in a five-game series or anything like that, but just based on what I know about, you know, sports and playoff series like that in general, in my mind, I don't see any way how the Rangers, you know, I just think that they'll get one of those next three games and the Rangers will take that series. And then transitioning over to, you know, the Twins-Astros game or series, a good first game between the two teams, close, but the bats for the Astros ultimately got it done. You know, they're currently playing right now. I think the Twins are winning, but it's still early. So, you know, that's a series I could see going either way. Part of me wants
Twins.
Part of me wants to get
the Astros out. I'm done seeing the Astros get the
I don't want to see you either,
I hope so. That's what I'm hoping for.
I'm hopeless. I want to see the Twins. Believe you me, I want to. I just think that the experience in this case is going to pull through one way or another, and I think we're going to see an Astros-Rangers AL championship series.
Nate, it's almost like you're reading my mind today. I was just thinking to myself, like, the Orioles looked really good this season, you know, and talked to me a week ago, and I could have said to you, my favorite for being the AL candidate for the World Series would have been the Orioles. To be very honest, I was fairly confident on them being the representative, but you know, you were right. They're down to 0-2 in the hole, and I mean, if they can rally and come back, great comeback story on their part. But they have a lot of small issues that are culminating to be the bigger issue to kind of tweak out in order to win these games. I do want to hold out hope for the Orioles. However, like I said, I don't know what the statistics say, so my gut is telling me to stick with the Orioles, but if I'm looking analytically speaking, I think the Rangers will pull out this series. And then moving up to the Twins and Astros, I mean, you were talking, there's a game going live right now in a live game update. It's 3-0 and the Twins are winning right now. And I don't want to see the Astros versus the Phillies in another World Series. Let's just be honest, I really don't. So again, my gut's like, let's go Twins, but I think that we'll, like Nate said, I think we'll see a battle between the two Texas teams in the championship series.
I'm going to agree with you guys. We're going to make it a clean sweep here. I think the Rangers, like Nate said, I think they win one of the next three games. And I think we all knew coming into this series that it would be a slugfest. There have been questions about the Orioles pitching coming in. You've got young guys like Grayson Rodriguez who have pitched well, Kyle Bradish, who pitched well, kept them in the game in game one. But two high-powered offenses that got them to where they are. And the Rangers' experienced bats have come through. You've had young guys, Evan Carter, with big hits so far. Really could make the team MVP on offense with his hits against the Rays and the Orioles. Corey Seager, 5 walks, a postseason high for anyone. You know, their offense is clicking on all cylinders. I think they're going to win one of the, you know, next handful of games. And I can't bet against the Astros. They have proven time and time again that, you know, they will find their way to the championship series somehow. I think the Twins can force 5. And if that would be that would be big in terms of implications into the championship series. But I think that can happen when I think Astros in 5. Now let's move on to the World Series to kind of close everything off with our predictions. You guys saying Phillies, Diamondbacks, and Astros, Rangers in the championship series. I put in the Dodgers as well on the National League side. Who do you guys think will be in the World Series, and who wins the World Series?
Oh, boy. Here we go, Jake. I mean, that's the question right there, man. You know, listen. I'll start in the AL. As you said, we all kind of agree. We all think it's going to be Rangers, Astros. And looking at that series, I mean, the two teams battled it out throughout the regular season. I don't know what the final season series split was, but I'm assuming it was close. Obviously, the Astros nudged the Rangers out just at the end to, you know, finish above them in the standings. I think that the Rangers, though, I just, you know, I think the Rangers, they have something special about them, you know, this postseason. They looked great against the Rays. You know, they're up 2-0 against the Orioles. I think they're going to carry that momentum. I think they're going to go to the World Series. They got a solid pitching staff and solid, you know, their offense, as you said, has been pretty great so this postseason. So I'll take the Rangers out of the AL. And then the NL, I have to go with my heart, and I have to go with the Philadelphia Phillies, baby. Red October. We're going to make a return. I love what the pitching's been doing. The bats and the atmosphere in Citizens Bank Park is second to none, to put it simple as you can be. Best atmosphere in postseason baseball will absolutely help this team and get to the World Series once again this year. So I have Rangers, Phillies.
Who is winning it then? Phillies, Rangers, are you picking the Phillies to win it? You got to pick a winner, Nate. Come on,
I gotta
now.
Pick a
Picking
winner.
A championship.
Yeah, I'm going Phillies. I'm going Phillies. I mean, I can't not. It's my. I have to go with my heart. I'm going Phillies, and I'll go Phillies. Phillies in like. I'm gonna say six. Six games.
All right, Phillies in 6.
Well, I guess the trend's gonna continue because Nate and I have been matching brainwaves. I don't even know what you want to call them, but like,
my
thoughts exactly.
Say.
When you see a face off. Of the two Texas teams in the AL, I purely think that the Twins have been performing on all calibers of the game better than the Astros. Like, the Astros bats get hot one game, and the Astros pitching is good the other game, and it's never consistently all around a good, consistent play for this team. So I see the Rangers as a very big threat to the Astros. The Rangers have shown what they're worth against. I mean, they've shown it against the Orioles, who are a fairly well-rounded team. I mean, they've shown that they'll come out and they'll win big games. So I will say that the Texas Rangers will be the representative of the AL, and you guessed it, I'm having my freaking fightings in there, baby. Like, no one likes us, and we don't care. Talk about, I mean, excitement. All purely excitement is, and I will fully admit I am following my heart, my passion for my team on this one. Ride or die Philadelphia fan here, but like everything they said, this Phillies team turns on a different switch in the month of October. And when they are performing and they are winning in the ways that they are winning, their mindset is, we didn't win the game. We have the next couple wins to go. We have only this many wins to go. They're not like, oh, yeah, we're winning, we're fine. We can just kind of relax. They're like, nah, we got 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 games left. Their minds aren't done with the game. They're looking on to the next game. Their mindsets have not shifted from the game, which I think is a very big motivator for them. You know, it's never over until it's over. And just like they said, the Philadelphia Philly atmosphere, I mean, Jake could probably attest to this the most, but like just the city of Philadelphia and the way they are a fan base is unrivaled and unmatched to any other MLB fan base ever, in my opinion. So the Philadelphia Phillies, the Texas...
With all that being said, who's winning the World Series?
So Philadelphia Phillies, Texas Rangers, I gotta go with the Fightins. I mean, I really do. It's a revenge tour from them from losing last year. It's their time. Ever since last year's World Series loss, they've got nothing on their minds except for getting that ring. I mean, you saw Nick Castellanos' celebration. So I say the Phillies take it in either 5 or 6.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go with, you guys are going Rangers, Phillies, and of course the viewers can catch the receipts if the Phillies end up losing. You know, they can come back right to the podcast right here. I'm going to go with rematch of last year. Astros, Phillies, World Series. You mentioned revenge tour. Why not do it against the team you lost to in the big game last year? And I'm going to say the Phillies get the revenge, but I'm going to go all the way through to 7 games. Phillies, Astros goes 7 games. They win it in game 7. I think these two teams right now, I'm looking at the pitching staffs. I'm looking at the pitching staffs combined with the offense, what I've seen from the teams in the field. I think the Astros pitching will do just enough to edge out the Rangers. I think the offenses are here. I think the Astros pitching staff and what they offer is better than the Rangers and Phillies Dodgers. I think that's going to be a longer series. I'm thinking 5, 6 games. But the Phillies pitching is here and the Dodgers is here with their injuries, with the suspensions, with those mishaps that have taken place. So I'm going to go with Phillies Astros, Phillies in 7. And with that, while we turn from one league in the heart of the playoffs to another that is starting out, we are in, well, right now in the heart of week number 5. We'll turn it over to Justin Reed Hammer. Justin, take it away. What's going on in the National Football League?
Thank you, Jacob. As you mentioned, the NFL has been in full effect for about 5 weeks now, with week 5 wrapping up here shortly. And so let's just dive right in and talk about some of the teams that have been impressive, some that not so much, what's been expected, what's been unexpected. So let's talk the NFC side of things first. And when we're talking the NFC, let's start with the top of the NFC. That would be the Philadelphia Eagles at 5-0 undefeated, and the San Francisco 49ers, who are also currently undefeated. However, they are still playing their game tonight against the Dallas Cowboys. But let's just talk these two teams to start off, because I think we can all say that it's been expected that these two teams would be the cream of the crop in the NFC. However, I think looking at it from the first couple of games at least, the Philadelphia Eagles have seemed to have gotten off to a bit of a slow start, but they are still undefeated, so that is very good for them. But I think the 49ers look phenomenal so far. I haven't seen a lot of flaw in the way that they've been playing. Their defense has been great. Their offense has been fantastic. And I think that they are probably going to be one of the hardest teams to beat in the league.
I'm just going to take this and run. Philadelphia Eagles fan, I will agree. The offense especially has taken a bit of a slower start than I expected. However, on the flip side, you are working with a new coordinator. You know, new impressions, new staff are always something to get a handle of. And you should have done this by week 5, sure. But I do feel, personally, the Eagles, in a very unbiased standpoint, the defense is rock solid. The Philadelphia Eagles defense has come up and made big plays. Jalen Carter, talk about a guy who could have gone number one in this draft this past year, has pressured the quarterback so much in his first 5 weeks of play. It is so much fun to watch him play. The Eagles defense is a lot of fun to always watch them play. Hassan Reddick had 2 sacks back-to-back tonight. Jake Elliott, special teams come up really important for this Phillies team, Eagles team, sorry. I will say, in any NFL game, it's not over till it's over, and what matters the most is doing what you need to do, making the plays you need to make the plays to win the games, no matter how ugly the games are. I mean, I bet Jake can attest this because he's an Eagles fan as well. We probably should have had a better handle on that Washington game. We really should have, as an Eagles team. But, you know, divisional games are a lot more difficult, as we'll talk about probably with the AFC and the Steelers and the Ravens today. But I feel like if the Eagles can kind of come up with a little bit of a tighter scheme, a tighter knit scheme on offense, maybe crank in the loose ends with the defense. I mean, injuries have been a factor with Avante Maddox and N'Kobe Dean being injured. That's also, those are factors because Maddox played a huge role in that secondary. I think that the Eagles will continue to do well. But the 49ers, Justin, I mean, talk about crazy. Christian McCaffrey's putting up unbelievable numbers for that squad. Brock Purdy, Mr. Nobody, Mr. Irrelevant, coming up big for this team. They literally, as I said this, just scored a touchdown on a, it was a pick six, I believe, actually. No, it was not. But they just scored a touchdown, irrelevantly. They just scored a touchdown, as I said those words. So, I mean, this 49ers team has the hype. They have the offensive weapons. Brock Purdy has worked really well with his receivers, with George Kittle, with any team with Christian McCaffrey in the backfield. Just kind of have a really good handle on things. So, this 49ers defense just picked up Randy Gregory, former Dallas Cowboy, former Denver Bronco. And he's a viable threat on defense. So they just keep building and building and building. And I do personally, as much as I am a diehard Eagles fan, I will say it's right now harder to beat the 49ers than it is to beat the Eagles. But that's just because the 49ers seem to have things a little more tight knit on the side of the football.
Yeah, I agree with that Peter. And I know, you know, referencing my thoughts on the Eagles as well. Yeah, I think it's been scrappy. It's at times just kind of loose and don't know what's going on. Turnovers have been an issue. Defense against the Commanders just really wasn't there. I think the Eagles will get there. I think they're lucky to be 5-0 at this point. I think that's safe to say based on how some of these games have went. Yeah, and then you look at the 49ers. It's such a well-oiled machine, and I think Brock Purdy is proving all of the doubters wrong. I think everyone knew how talented Christian McCaffrey was going to be. Everyone knew how talented this defense was going to be on the other side. But there were still questions about Brock Purdy with Sam Darnold coming in. So, yeah, and Debo as well, Justin, just mentioning as well, his talent, Kittle. I mean, McCaffrey, Ayuk, another guy in there that, you know, you lose track of just how much talent they have with how easily they're winning and how much they have of it. But I'm looking at the quarterback, Brock Purdy, who has clearly shown that he is a starter, and, you know, not just a starter. I'm not saying he's a Pro Bowler by any means, but he is leading. You could make the argument the best offense in football on the best team in football. I think you can make the argument so far this season. So proving the doubters wrong for the 49ers.
Yeah, I think you guys pretty much covered this. I mean, there's not much to say. The 49ers, as Justin and all of you have said, have looked fantastic. Definitely looked like the team to beat in the NFL, the best overall team, offense and defense. Have been pretty flawless to start the year. You know, if you're a Niners fan, there's not much more you could ask for. And from an Eagles standpoint, as you guys said, they've had their struggles, you know, a few games that didn't quite pan out how they probably should have from an Eagles fan or fan standpoint and from the team standpoint. However, like you said, they are 5-0, and the season is still, you know, it's still early in the season. They are growing with every week and every game, and I think that, you know, they're only going to get better from here on out and build on, you know, that the wins they've collected thus far. So I think both teams are in a fantastic position, especially in the NFC.
Yeah, well, it was expected that those two teams would get off to hot starts, but something that was unexpected, I would say, we're going to talk about the Dallas Cowboys here for a minute, because I don't think any of us really expected them to come out as hot as they have. Now, I think that it might be too early to say whether they're going to do well in the playoffs or not, but as of right now, they do look like a contender, winning some, you know, pretty good games with that defense that has just been electric.
Yes. Like I said, for the Eagles, games are games, whether you, how, no matter how you win or lose them, a win's a win. the Dallas Cowboys defense is the reason they are so good. Dak Prescott has not put up any really impressive numbers. Tony Pollard has had a few good games here and there. But in all reality, this Dallas team has played fairly mediocre teams. I mean, if you're looking at their past schedule, week one was against the Giants. Moving on to week two, I believe it was against... actually, I don't want to get this wrong. Week two was against the Jets, correct?
I think it was against Jets.
Week two was the Jets. Week three was against... I believe it was... Wasn't it...
The Cardinals.
The Cardinals. Week three was the Cardinals. That was their first loss, which was a very surprising loss to me. Last week, they just played...
Patriots.
The Patriots, correct. So, the Jets, the Cardinals, the Giants, and the Patriots. Four teams take out the Cardinals, who haven't had a surprising start. And the Jets have been getting better. So, that leaves you the Giants and the Patriots. The Giants and the Patriots are not performing this season. I mean, the Patriots have been outscored by, like, I think over 60 points in the last two games. And the Giants, I mean, talk about having a first decent game this week. Like one or two decent games. I just feel like the Dallas Cowboys haven't played anybody up to their caliber of competition to show that they're a worthy team of being noted as good. They're beating mediocre teams, and it's not that much thanks to the offense. So sure, they've only had one loss to the Arizona Cardinals, which is a surprising loss to me. I did not see that coming, but the Arizona Cardinals have been working to get better with Josh Dobbs, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, but I just, the Dallas Cowboys don't feel like a legitimate good team label until they play somebody who is within the same level caliber like they're playing the 49ers tonight. That outcome of the game will show how good these Dallas Cowboys really are.
Yeah, I agree, Peter. I think the defense is one of the best in the league with Michael Parsons and company. I think their secondary, the additions that they brought in with Stephon Gilmore are great. Their offense, we're waiting to see. We're waiting to see that game from Dak and that offense, CeeDee Lamb, Tony Pollard, all of those guys really have rhythm. Yeah, and I'm going to focus on that Cardinals game for just a second. I mean, very surprising. Very surprising, not only for their defense, but their offense against that Cardinals defense. You look at that game on the schedule and think, you know, that's one where we could see Dak get going. And that offense put up a 30-plus point performance, but it didn't. And still waiting on that. But, you know, until further notice, I still view the Cowboys as up there right underneath the Eagles and the 49ers who we just talked about.
You know, as you guys pretty much already covered this, but just looking at the Cowboys schedule, take a step back, look at it. All right, week one, you play the Giants. Terrible. All right, let's just be honest. Giants, been a hot mess this year. Nowhere near what Giants the fans thought they would be coming into this season. You said week two. You get a Rodgerless Jets with Zach Wilson. Well, there's not much you can do there. I mean, it's not the Jets team that everybody thought that they were going to have this year. You know, week three, as we've talked about, surprising loss to the Cardinals of all teams who have played admirably to start this year. But again, not a game that the Cowboys should be losing with that defense they have. And then week four, you have the Patriots. Two words, hot garbage. They stink. All right, so... Who have the Cowboys really played? Nobody. They have an elite defense. I do believe that. But I haven't seen anything from the offense or Dak Prescott to make me think these people can actually, you know, contend.
Yeah, it's a fair point there. They really haven't played a lot of great competition yet, but it is still the NFL. And to see them winning by a lot, especially with the defense putting up such big points. I think they have four touchdowns in the season so far. So, I mean, that is impressive.
Don't forget,
still.
Trayvon Diggs. He's done, so that's a big hit for that defense. Big loss.
It is, and I'd say that tonight is a big measuring stick game for them. Of course, it will not be. It will be decided by the time this episode comes out. But let's move on then a little bit.
You know, the viewer will know if it was a good measuring stick game or not.
Yes, they will. They'll know for sure. But let's just talk about something that I got wrong. I will say in my predictions for the season here about a month ago, I thought that the Chicago Bears would be a decent team this year. I was really wrong about that, guys. I'm gonna say that right now. Detroit Lions look fantastic. I thought they would look good. They look phenomenal. They are gonna win that division. I will say that right now. And the Bears, I'm gonna be surprised if they surpass 5 wins.
There's no negating the fact that the Bears have absolutely not lived up to any standards whatsoever. I mean, I feel bad personally for Justin Fields. He's a fairly, I think he's got talent for this league. I just don't think that it fits the Bears scheme where the Bears kind of like work. But yeah, I based off of how the Bears have been playing, they're not going to get anywhere near 500. They're not going to have a winning season. I think they don't get more than 5 or 6 wins. But again, you know, you talk about the Lions who any, and I was talking, and I'm just like, any team with the coach of the passion of Dan Campbell, that's what players need. Dan Campbell is a phenomenal coach. He's there for his players. He's playing with his team, and it seems like Dan Campbell is just as involved in the game as his team is, as his players are, and he's always there for his players. Sam Laporta, the rookie tight end for that team, has come up big for that offense. And, you know, David Montgomery, huge, huge weapon on that offense. And, you know, these receivers have come out and shown out. Jared Goff is having a really good season. And this defense as well. I mean, the Lions defense has really done a very good job of containing games, keeping the opposing team fairly low scoring. So I do believe that the Lions will also win their division. And I would not be surprised if they made us a fairly good playoff run.
Yeah, yeah, Justin, the Bears take is not looking too good right about now. I mean, Steelers are doing all right. You know, I'll give you that one for now. For now, we'll see how Pickett and Matt Canada run offense will continue throughout the rest of the season. But going off of the Bears, yeah, of course, you know, not to be selfish or anything, but someone picked Justin Fields in fantasy, and someone regretted that after week 2. I'm so glad that he came through for me on Thursday night. But yeah, I you know, multiple players, him, Chase Claypool, who was just dealt a few days ago to the Dolphins for his comments. I think it's coaching too. I know Fields has not looked very well, but I feel like just there's not a lot of energy. I feel like the coaches are just not giving much motivation to the players. I think that has a part of it. And maybe they heard the comments, they heard all of the talk, and that was the performance you got on Thursday, a big offensive performance from Fields and DJ Moore and company. I'm thinking 5-6 wins. I think they'll end up with at least one pick inside of the top 4. Of course, there's rumorings with Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison Jr. If they decide to stick with Fields, I think you need to see him play out the rest of the season before making a decision to draft someone. Of course, we mentioned with the Eagles, but I feel like, you know, in a reverse way, we need to give some light on the Bears here. You know, there's still a long season for Justin Fields to figure it out and chain some great productions together. But yeah, I think there's going to be some change in the off season to some degree, whether that's coaches, whether that's, you know, guys traded away, whether that's a new quarterback in the event of that happening. And then for the Lions in that division, I think Peter pointed it out, and I'm going to highlight it. Jared Goff, you know, give it up for Jared Goff. I mean, a guy that was almost righted off from Los Angeles after the Super Bowl run, traded for Matthew Stafford. The Rams got a Super Bowl because of it. And now Jared Goff is playing like the quarterback that went to the Super Bowl with the Rams. And I think we're seeing that again, and it's great to see him having a resurgence and leading this Lions team front-running that division.
And I will also admit here, Justin, as it pertains to this division, one of my, you know, preseason picks has not panned out. I did say Minnesota would win the division. They have looked very poor, to say the least, especially defensively. But moving, you know, to the Bears, as we've said, very, very disappointing start to the season for them. A lot of people thought that, you know, Fields would take that jump. Hasn't happened for whatever reasons, whether it's coaching or just comes down to him not developing over the off season, like people thought he would. They just have not performed. And a team like Detroit, who had a strong season last year, 9-8, just missed out on that final wild card, have really, you know, built off of that and started the season strong. They look, as you said, fantastic on both sides of the ball. I love Dan Campbell as a coach. You know, he's got those players in the right mindset to go and get it this year. And thus far, they've been doing that. And I really like what I'm seeing out of that Detroit team. So Yeah, I think it's their division of the NFC North to lose basically at this point.
Yeah, you mentioned the record being 4-1 there. Well, moving to the AFC side, there are 2 4-1 teams currently, and the one team lost to the Detroit Lions in week one, getting their only loss of the season so far. That's the Kansas City Chiefs, which we expected to be good. However, the other team is not the Buffalo Bills. The other team is the Miami Dolphins, who has been a surprise so far this season with their amazing offense, absolutely electric, putting up 70 points the 1 week against the Denver Broncos. I mean,
Nate, where you going, Nate?
Nate
left us. Look at what you did, Justin. You just kicked up. He is hiding from the camera.
we don't talk about it. We don't talk.
You can't
about
hide
it.
From the shame that is your terrible defense, and that is. But that's not what we're here to discuss today. We're here to discuss the Miami's great offense. You know, you got guys like Tua Tagovailoa showing out this season, early MVP candidate. And then Tyreek Hill, of course, you have Jaylen Waddle doing well. And then on the running back side of things, Raheem Mostert has been really good so far, very consistent. But A-Chain, the rookie, has been absolutely phenomenal to start the season here. I should have picked him up in fantasy when I had the chance, guys, I'll be honest.
Oh, I was putting in that waiver claim. First day. He had that big game.
Yeah, but they have looked really good so far. I think that their success will continue. However, their defense might be an issue moving forward. But for the most part, I think that they're going to win most of the games that they play this season, assuming Tua stays healthy, which so far he has been. So I think that they will be a contender in the AFC and potentially for their division.
I'll say it. The Chiefs have snuck wins in for the most part. I mean, last week against the Jets, they won a very generous referee call that could have changed the course of the game very quickly. They snuck past the Jets, and they just snuck past Minnesota on, again, a call made by a referee that was also, we could have gone both ways with the penalty there. But, you know, the Chiefs are always going to figure out a way to win, whether or not it's a referee call or just Patrick Mahomes being Patrick Mahomes in that offense. But flipping to the Dolphins, I mean, I had a feeling the Dolphins would take a little bit of a jump this year from their performance last year. But when you have an offense as fiery as this offense is right now, putting up the most offensive yardages through 5 weeks, and just, I mean, their connection with a very healthy-looking Tua and Tyreek and Jaylen Waddle, you have these amazing opportunities with this team. And then, like you said, Justin, the running back committee is awesome. And let's remember, this isn't even their starting running back. Jeff Wilson Jr. is the so-called starter, and he's on IR. So what is this running back committee going to look like when Jeff Wilson gets back? Will he be pushed into the number one starting position? Will it be a committee? Will you cut down A-Chain's performance? I mean, I wouldn't, because he's been performing so well, but what do you do with this? I would note, as a fairly elite running back core who has proven game in and game out that they can make the big plays when they need to be made. And I mean, I hate to recap on it, but in this 70-point game against the Broncos, I mean, they figured it out. Let's be honest, the Broncos haven't had the season that they wanted to have, but this Dolphins offense is phenomenal, very fun to watch, with the exception of their loss to Buffalo. I honestly think that they are a force to be reckoned with in the AFC.
Yeah, Nate, I will try and spare you from any more Broncos slander.
Please,
here.
we weren't going to talk about him anyway.
Some people on the pod do not care about your feelings at all as a fan. But now I'll start. Yeah, with the Chiefs, I think we're seeing a team that is no longer unbeatable, if you will. Which, you know, I don't mean, you know, quotations, but that's been the moniker of this Kansas City Chiefs team, with their high flying offense and their bend but don't break defense. But it very similar to how we talked about the Eagles earlier. I think that the same can be said. The Chiefs have just not looked Chiefs-like to begin. A lot of close games, as Peter mentioned, the close call against the Jets that went their way to pull out the win. Of course, you know, got the millions of new fans of Taylor Swift that are rooting for the team right now. But, you know, they're off to a slow start.
You had to bring it enough, didn't you?
Well, I mean, that innates feelings as a fan. One of them had to give, so I brought up the Swifties. So, I'm going.
You don't live with Nate. You don't know what he's like on a day-to-day basis. I got to get those jabs in when I can.
Okay. All right.
Careful, he can go right down the stairs and kick your butt there, bud.
Yeah, watch out.
I think the Chiefs are going to get it together. You have Mahomes, you have Kelce, but I think teams are starting to figure out, okay, double team Kelce and let any of these wide receivers that have still not proven that they can get it done beat you. And, you know, I think there's going to be some games in the middle of the season where team's going to do that and the Chiefs are going to lose. So, but I think they're still going to win north of 10, 11 games and get into the playoffs. And the Dolphins team, an electric offense, the defense, as you mentioned, Justin, concerns me. But I do know, I believe Jalen Ramsey is going to be coming back at some point. I know he had surgery before the season and was going to be out at least, I think, 5-6 weeks. I think he's coming back soon. That'll be a help to that secondary that has left a handful of yards, especially to the Bills in that big game for the Bills last week against the Dolphins. I think that will help them. But yeah, that's going to be an exciting race too. The Bills and the Dolphins once again. You know, a shame that the Jets, what happened to Zach Wilson in that division. Who knows if Aaron Rodgers plays, if that's a tighter race. But the Dolphins and the Bills, once again, I think it's going to come down late in the season. Another matchup between the two in Florida that time. It's going to come down to the end of the season for that division.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there, Jake. As you know, we've all discussed, the high-powered Dolphins offense has looked, you know, fantastic to start the year. It's definitely been great for, you know, fantasy managers who have had certain skill position players on that team. And they've really, really shown up and shown out week in and week out with, last week hitting a little speed bump there against the Bills, who in their own right have a really good team and a great defense up there in Buffalo. And as you said, that division's really going to come down to the wire this year, Jake. But going over to Kansas City side of things, I agree with what you said. I don't think that they have looked as, you know, spectacular as some people thought they would start this season. And I think, you know, you can go back to that week one game, and they didn't have Travis Kelce in that game against Detroit, and it really exposed how weak their wide receiver core is this year. Obviously, Juju is no longer there. Really, you know, dealing with guys like Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney, players who haven't shown up. And I think, like you said, Jake, it's going to hurt them come middle of the season when they have a tougher slate and, you know, tougher opponents to play. I think you're going to see, you know, this Kansas City team falter a little bit. Again, still, as you said, still the Chiefs. They're still going to get those wins against especially divisional opponents. And I think they'll end up with, you know, 10, 11, maybe even 12 wins if they're lucky. But, yeah, I think there is, you know, a little bit of slippage from the defending Super Bowl champs to start this year.
Yeah, for sure. I do think the Chiefs aren't looking as good. I do just want to touch on Buffalo real quickly. You know, it's the fan in me. I think that Buffalo's looking good this season, but I think I'm a little concerned because our defense, you know, we're getting injured. You know, we got Tre'Davious White. He's out probably for the season. Torn Achilles, I'm pretty sure. And then Matt Milano just went down. We got a couple other starters who are going to be missing time as well. So it's going to be a rough way to go there. And staying within the division, talking about injuries, I wanted to touch on the absolute mastodon that is Aaron Rodgers and how he went out in the most amazing fashion for a Bills fan like myself, you know. Well, we did lose.
We do not. We do not condemn injuries here, Justin.
No, of course not. But just all the. I'm just saying, all the buildup and all the hype throughout this entire season, they're going to be the best team in the league. They're going to win. It's Jets, Jets, Jets. That's all you hear. You hear Jets on the AFC side. You hear Dallas on the NFC side because two big market teams. You know, Jets. They have Aaron Rodgers. They're the team. They're going to make it. And then Aaron Rodgers lasts less time than any of us do in bed. So I mean,
I did not say it. You did, Justin. But anyway,
it feels like, you know, a bit of divine intervention. Like, yes, that's a little bit deserved, but I do not condone that, obviously. I hope he gets better soon, and for the Jets' sake, that would be the best. But I do also want to touch on a little bit of surprise in the AFC North, which is the fact that the Cincinnati Bengals are scraping the bottom of that division. Who would have thought entering the season that the Cincinnati Bengals would be 2-3 and just have looked like one of the worst teams in the National Football League? Because I wouldn't have expected it. I'll tell you that much.
I mean, I'll speak on this, and I will humble myself as a Joe Burrow fantasy owner. It hurts. And then for the first time this season, I did not start him. And of course, he performs like old Joe Burrow does. Only my luck. But, you know, it's surprising. I do feel like, and I, you know, and I think about this in a way that Joe Burrow missed the entire preseason with a calf injury. Offense has gotten to a slow start. Quick flip, Jalen Hurts. Missed the entire preseason, didn't play in the games. Offense is to a slow start. I mean, is there a correlation here? Or am I crazy that starting quarterbacks should take more advantage of these preseason games rather than just Burrow with an injury? But I mean, these preseason games would be an important kind of like kind of get on your feet again, get the wheels in motion, because it just seems like Cincinnati's offense has not been able to figure it out up until this week. You know, Ja'Marr Chase was having a rough ride, and T. Higgins, and I mean, drop balls are very crucial in games. Like, you can't drop passes like the Cincinnati Bengals offense has. But I mean, I did not expect them to be 2-3. However, they played a very last year or two Bengals looking game today. Their offense was firing on all cylinders. The defense looked pretty good. I don't worry necessarily as much as I would say if they would have lost today again. I do think that the Bengals have some more to work on, but I don't think this is time for Bengals fans to panic and say, oh, our season's over, we're gonna be the worst team in our division. I don't think that, because you are in the same division as the Pittsburgh Steelers. Don't worry, Bengals fans. You're lucky you got the Steelers there with you.
Well, Peter is going at the Steelers. I will look at the Bills and talking about Justin mentioning their injuries. Yeah, it just, you know, Tre'Davious White, again, it seems like he's really struggled with injuries over the past few years. And that defense, which, oh, of course, everyone talks about Josh Allen, talks about Stephon Diggs and that offense and how many points they score. That defense is, and of course, Justin can correct me if I'm wrong here, has been really the heart and soul of that team at times during the regular season, heading into the playoffs, with the performances they put together, especially when everyone is healthy in the secondary, rushing the passer with Ed Oliver and company. But if those guys are out, of course, White, it sounds like he's out for the season, but Milano and others out for significant time, then they're forced to win games in shootouts. And while I think they can do that, the offense, not every game, as we've seen sometimes with Josh Allen, has been able to put up 20, 30-plus points and match teams that way. So that's going to be interesting, especially when, as we just mentioned, a team like the Dolphins, who they'll play again, how that matchup will unfold later in the season. But yeah, the Bengals, you know, 2-3. Peter, I'm right there with you in another league. Joe Burrow, just disappointing. Just heart-wrenching the way that he was playing the first, really, you could say, 4 weeks of the season, you know, excluding this fifth-week game where he played well. But they had a slow start last year. They had a slow start last year. So I'm not counting them out. They are a team that I think can turn it on in a hurry and rip off four, five, even six games in a row where it's like, yeah, that's a team that I can put in an AFC championship game. So I'm not counting them out just yet.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Jake. I mean, despite how poorly, you know, they've looked and Joe Burrow has looked, you know, today, sign of hopefully good things to come for that offense and Joe Burrow. The Bengals, they've been so, you know, always in the picture past couple years now. And I'd like to think that they will be able to rebound from this poor start and, you know, finish atop or second in their division and in place for, you know, at least a wild card spot in the AFC by the end of the season. And as it pertains to the Bills, a shame, seriously, with the injuries and, you know, especially to Tre'Davious White, who I think tore his ACL, 2 years back, or, you know, had another serious season-ending injury not that long ago. So it's really is a shame. And, you know, it's the same story with the Bills. They just can never seem to have their full complement, their full team there for the long haul, and it might really come back to hurt them in the end, unfortunately, this season, especially with a team like Miami in that division. So it's going to be interesting to see how they cope with that. But I think that them and the Bengals, you know, two teams that, you know, many people consider top three, top four teams in the AFC, they'll be all right. I think they'll both be all right, and you'll see both in the playoffs.
Well, we'll keep an eye on all of those teams moving forward. We'll have more, you know, coming episodes as the season ends to the middle and even in the end. We'll break it down. We'll see how all of those teams move throughout the season. Now, guys, one final segment here on this episode of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast, the NBA. Damian Lillard requesting a trade months ago from the Portland Trail Blazers. There was back and forth over the summer where he would go. One team, the Miami Heat, seemed to be in front of all of the conversations. You know, it almost was like he had the suitcases in hand. He had the hula hoop skirt on, the Hawaiian shirt to go to Miami. And he goes to Milwaukee, and the Milwaukee Bucks swoop in and pair Damian Lillard with the Greek Freak, in my opinion, a top two player in the game, and pair him in Milwaukee to make a huge threat, not only with Giannis, you know, Chris Middleton's there as well, Brook Lopez. And then on the flip side, the ripple effects of the trade, Drew Holiday, a lockdown defender and good scorer in his own right, DeAndre Ayton, the Suns got involved. He was sent to Portland. The Suns got Yusuf Nurkic and some depth back from Milwaukee and Portland as a result. And then the last part of it, Drew Holiday shipped to Milwaukee's biggest contender in the Eastern Conference, the Boston Celtics, getting a lockdown guard to replace Marcus Smart. So I'll start with the Damian Lillard trade. Guys, Your thoughts on him not going to Miami, but rather to Milwaukee.
Bring a jacket. The weather's not the same.
Yeah, the winters are a bit more harsh. I can agree with you there, Peter.
Trades always feel like, in any sport, a fresh start for players. You know, fresh start, new team, new coaching. See if the player can take advantage of this new opportunity. See if he can. I mean, we saw the Bucks do very well in the last few years. So see if he can be a vital asset to this team, or see if it wasn't such a good trade idea.
This was a huge trade and really affects the NBA, I think, massively. And, you know, as Jake said, going into this offseason with Damian Lillard, you know, requesting a trade, you know, the whispers, the rumors, he wants Miami. Miami's the destination. He wants to go to Miami, wants to be in South Beach. Did not come to fruition. And rather, he's going to Milwaukee, where he's going to be with Giannis, who, as you said, Jake, top, you know, 2-3 player in the NBA. I mean, he's just been a beast up there in Milwaukee. And I think that these two really complement each other well. I think you have Giannis, who is such a dominant force down low, who, you know, defenses really have to plan and, you know, devise a way to stop him. And you have a guy like Damian Lillard, who can absolutely shoot the lights out from three-point range and take over a game that way. So it's going to be really difficult for teams to, you know, get a defensive scheme to guard both these players effectively. And then you still have guys like Chris Middleton, Brook Lopez, Bobby Portis. I mean, you look at this Bucks team, and it, to me, right now, really looks like one of the best, if not the best, team in the NBA. I mean, they just top to bottom look like a fantastic basketball team. Now, unfortunately, as you said, Jake, they had to, you know, give up players in this process, and one of the casualties of that is Drew Holiday, who moved to Portland, and then, obviously, Portland shipped him to Boston. And Boston picks up, you know, Drew. I think that was a great move for them. Obviously, Marcus Smart going to Memphis. They need a guy to replace Smart, and I think Drew Holiday is a perfect fit. I think a guard such as him, who brings that defensive caliber to the team, that grit, I think that, you know, he'll fit in nicely. I feel bad for him. You know, I heard, saw what his wife said about how they got no warning about the trade from Milwaukee. But I think that it's a fantastic fit in Boston. And as Sixers fans, Jake, it does worry me looking now at these two teams in the East, Milwaukee and Boston. It just feels like, at least to me, that it's really going to come down to Milwaukee and Boston in the East. They just, both their rosters, top to bottom, look the most complete and look very, very dangerous heading into this season.
Yeah, we'll segue into some Sixers news, some world basketball news in just a second. But yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, selfishly as a Sixers, you know, I was like, oh, maybe Drew Holiday, if they can, you know, find a way to put a package together for Portland, that would be pretty nice along with Maxey. But I, as a basketball fan, I cannot wait for a Bucks-Celtics series once again. Those series do not disappoint, and now even more, you add Lillard. It's almost like the Warriors-Lakers, like those kind of matchups, how those have been in the Western Conference with all of the firepower that's coming together. You love to see it. It ends up becoming almost like a pickup game of stars, the way that it's going to be with Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. Then you add in Drew Holiday against his former team, and you add Damian Lillard on the other side. Like I'm just so excited thinking about it right now for a potential playoff series in the future as a NBA fan as a whole. But I'm going to look at a different aspect of the whole trade. The Suns, the Phoenix Suns, and even the Trailblazers, they've picked a direction. I think Ayton will be better. Fresh start in Portland. All the expectations of being a top guy in with the Suns and being that big four is off of his shoulders. He gets to play with the young team alongside Scoot Henderson. He's going to perform, and I like the Suns. They traded Ayton away, got more depth. I don't think Nurkic has the same ceiling, but they have the guard and forward heavy with all of their stars. They just needed a body there, and Nurkic is good and can give you offensive production and some rim protection as well. So, you know, one of these, like, wow. All four of these teams really involved, I think, one in some aspect. So I think it's great. And as we've all mentioned, changed the landscape of the NBA. Speaking of changing a landscape, how about talking about the world? It was just recently announced in the NBA as we kind of wrap up this segment and the show this week. Joel Embiid, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, among a handful of others, signing on for the USA basketball next year in Paris. Again, the United States was bounced early in the FIBA tournament this past summer, heading into the fall, you know, in disappointing fashion. I think, you know, it was well noted. You know, FIBA basketball, very different, very similar to the World Cup, where there's that pride involved with a lot of these different teams and countries, and the United States didn't match up to the challenge. But now you talk about some of the top 10 players in the game, a lot of them are signing on to play for Team USA.
Yeah, Jake, it's definitely exciting to see, you know, our big man, the reigning MVP, Joel Embiid, signing up Team USA. He's ready to go. He's committed to play in Paris 2024. I think it's great. And I think, as you said, Team USA, I didn't watch teams personally, but I kept up with it. You know, they got bounced, I believe, by Germany in the FIBA World Cup. Tough loss. And I think they lost the third place game to Canada, I believe, too. So the U.S., from our perspective, the home of the NBA, you know, we really want to represent that. We want to show what we're made of, and I think that this Olympics is a big moment to show what we have. And I think that, you know, Embiid and the rest of these big name players are going to come along, and I think that it's going to return us to where we should be, and that's the top of international basketball world.
I just think it'll be a lot of fun to watch these teams. These teams in the Olympics, but also this Team USA. I mean, I watched little basketball. Watching Joel Embiid is a lot of fun. Steph Curry can hit the net from virtually anywhere you put him. And just, you know, LeBron James speaks for himself with his numbers that he's put up. I do agree that this caliber of a team with the names on paper seem like a very big threat to other teams. Although, like you said, I mean, other countries, you know, the passion for it So I think it'll be a very, very fun time to watch. I think honestly, genuinely think I will try to watch some of these games now because being a Philly fan also encapsulates the Sixers. I follow them not as closely, but I still follow them. And you know, it'd be a lot of fun to see Joel Embiid on the what you can call one of the grandest stages of them all, and being the Olympics. So.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting to watch the NBA, the MLB postseason, and the NFL season unfolding. We'll keep you updated on it all in the next episode of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast. Again, for Nate, Peter, and Justin, Jacob here with you. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast. You can catch episodes on YouTube and Spotify. Once again, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.